This week on the College Football Roundup, the Aggies embarrass LSU, more disappointment in Norman, Indiana pulverizes UCLA, and so much more. This is the Monday Report, starting now. All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, October 26, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we've got a packed show for you. We're going to talk about Texas A&M versus LSU, Oklahoma versus Ole Miss. We're going to talk all about the whole Lane Kiffin to Florida thing, at UCLA and Indiana, Michigan and Michigan State. We're going to have some quick hits for you, and then we're going to take a look ahead to the next week. So let's get right into it. All right, starting at the top, Texas A&M embarrassed LSU on Saturday. The score was 18-14 in favor of LSU at one point before Texas A&M scored 35 straight points to win the game 49-25. Now, I will be completely honest. I was watching the Michigan versus Michigan State game while this game was on television, so I generally didn't see most of this game, but excuse me. Sorry. I saw a lot of the discourse about this game, and I ended up looking at the stats, and I watched a little bit of tape, but I didn't actually watch this game live, so I didn't really get a lot of the vibe of this game, but still. So, news flash to anyone who didn't already know, Texas A&M is really good. I know, shocking, yeah. Mike Elko's got that team humming. They're 8-0. And they're a physical, scare-you-to-death kind of 8-0. They're not like they just score a bazillion points and they just get by on flash. No, no, no. They pulverize you in the trenches. It is meat and potatoes, physical, complimentary football, and they are really good at it, as LSU learned. So, last week, I had an entire segment about how LSU shouldn't fire Brian Kelly. And then he got embarrassed at home at night against Texas A&M. Oh, Brian, you're killing me, man. What are you doing? So, we're talking about him for the second week in a row. So, there's no other way to put this. LSU just got flat embarrassed. They're not physical enough on offense and defense. They make too many sloppy mistakes. They're not a good team. And that comes down to coaching. Now, there are rumors coming all the way from the governor of the state of Louisiana that changes might be coming for LSU. Now, whether that's firing Brian Kelly, firing members of his staff, change at a quarterback, we don't really know. I'm recording this at 7 p.m. on Sunday, so we'll see if there's anything crazy that happens, but as of the time of recording, we have not had any reports of these rumored changes. Now, that being said, I stand by what I said last week. LSU should not fire Brian Kelly. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Right now, it's looking like if everything goes how I think it's going to go, you're going to have Florida, Auburn, you're going to have, Wisconsin, Penn State. You could have Wisconsin maybe Michigan State. I mean, there's a lot of teams who want to be players in major college football. There's only so many elite coaches. So with so many teams likely pulling the trigger, I caution people, do not pull the trigger this year. Because I will guarantee you what will happen. LSU will fire Brian Kelly. And then they will struggle to find someone who can live up to his stature. And then they will find someone from the group of five level. Or they'll find a coach like Will Stein, the offensive coordinator at Oregon, who is a reasonable hire, but he's not flashy. He doesn't bring the wow that their fans would likely want. And then they're just eh. They're exactly what they are right now for the next 4 years, and then they fire that person, and we're right back here in 2030. Yeah, that's as a Michigan fan, that's how you get lost in the wilderness. Unless it gets really bad, like what's going on with Luke Fickell in Wisconsin, hold the course. And I know Brian Kelly has been there 4 years and there's still no movement, but it took Harbaugh almost 8 years to get to the top of the mountain. So these things take time. And what it can come down to is getting the right guy in the quarterback room. I mean, we do not underestimate the fact that they were recruiting Bryce Underwood to go to LSU. You cannot tell me he wasn't the long-term strategy. And as a Michigan fan, he's the real deal. But instead, they're stuck with Garrett Nussmeier. And that's no shot at Garrett Nussmeier, but he's not a flashy, take-over-a-game, consistent kind of QB. He's just not. Like, Michigan, under Jim Harbaugh, had a succession of okay QBs. Jake Rudock, he was solid, but he wasn't great. You had, oh man, Wilton Spate, John O'Korn, Shea Patterson, Cade McNamara. You had, that big dude who went to Tennessee. Him, whose name escapes me all of a sudden. I can't remember his name. He was huge and fast. He had a howitzer for an arm. Either way, it was just one QB after another at Michigan over and over and over and over and over. And then J.J. McCarthy arrived. And everything changed. So I caution people, patience. Brian Kelly is a good coach. He is a good coach. I know Michigan fans, we've been crapping on all over Brian Kelly for 20 years. But from an honest, intellectually honest standpoint, he is the real deal. He can get you there. He took Notre Dame to the national championship, for Christ's sake. Notre Dame before NIL. Back when you had to do it with nerds and geeks from the suburbs. When you couldn't get those dumb wide receivers from Louisiana and Florida that are real fast and can catch balls but are dumber than a box of rocks. You can get those guys at Notre Dame now because they have the portal and stuff. But back when Kelly was there, no. You had to get those smart, not as athletic white boys from who went to Brother Rice and shit. Those are the guys that Notre Dame was dealing with. Not anymore. So it was harder back then. And he took those teams to a national championship. Now, admittedly, they ran into a buzzsaw and they got, like, blasted by Alabama. But it was the greatest Alabama team in every way. Either way, LSU fans, it sucks. Trust me. I'm a Michigan fan. The first, like, 12 years of my Michigan fandom was a never-ending cavalcade of pain and misery. And then you got the quarterback. And everything lined up. You had Jaden Daniels, but everything else other than Jaden Daniels wasn't right. Brian Kelly has the defense sorted. That's a good defense. You get a good offensive coordinator with a real identity. You get an actual QB in the building. You're good to go. That's it. Brian Kelly can recruit. He's a good coach on game days. So don't fire him, and especially not this year. Oh my God, don't do it this year. You're not going to get a good guy. So LSU, I'm reiterating what I said last week. Don't fire Brian Kelly. Now for Texas A&M, if you put a gun to my head and said, who's winning the SEC when the season's over? Right now, I'd say, it's Texas A&M. Yeah. Not Oklahoma, not Texas, not Bama or Georgia or Florida. No, it's Texas A&M. None of the usual suspects, it's Texas A&M. They are so good. Like, they've got an incredible quarterback in Marcel Reed. I think it's Reed or Reese. I'm going to say Marcel Reed. They got a great QB. They got a really good offensive and defensive line. They got solid defensive players at the second and the third level. Mike Elko's a great coach. They got solid position players on offense. They are everything you want in a contender. So yeah, Texas A&M is the real deal. They're my pick right now for the ICC just because I think they'll pulverize anyone they come in contact with. Excuse me, I have a straight up water bottle this week because my cup is dirty. All right, moving on. Oklahoma falls to Ole Miss. Oh God. Oklahoma, as a Michigan fan, you're really killing me, man. We really need you to kind of win to make it not look like we lost to a bad team on the road. Either way, Ole Miss won 34-26. Oklahoma wasn't really in the game. It's weird. Okay, so they kind of hung around, but they never were, like, a factor in the game until very late. Like, Oklahoma had to have a 76-yard touchdown throw from John Mateer and a 65-yard touchdown run from Xavier Robinson just to stay in the fight. They couldn't put a drive together to save their lives for three quarters of the game. And a lot of that comes down to John Mateer. Now, I know he's cleared to play and he's back in the lineup, but you can't tell me that boy is healthy. Mm-mm-mm. They don't do any of the designed QB runs that they were doing. His throws are woefully inaccurate. Oh my God, everything is either in the dirt, 2 feet in front, 2 feet behind, or 10 feet over a wide receiver's head. All of the ball placement and accuracy we were seeing in, like, when he was high September Heisman hype, no, that's all gone. And it's because of that thumb of his. You know, you got those pins in the thumb, and it might be, quote-unquote, healed, but he ain't right yet. Now, maybe come December, if you're still in the hunt, then maybe. But, boy, Mateer is not great, and it's really pulled down the offense. I mean, this game, wow. I was watching this game all afternoon, and then I had to run some errands, and I was still kind of paying attention to it on the radio in my car, and it just, boy, they were not in it until they were in it, but only kind of, and then Ole Miss kind of pulled away. And for Ole Miss, actually, no, I want to make one more point before I get to Ole Miss, because I got some stuff to say about Ole Miss, too. Brett Venables, it's one of those where, like Brian Kelly, I think he's a good coach. I think he can pull it together at Oklahoma. But it's the same issues that he's had his entire time at Oklahoma. Great defense, horrific offense that doesn't do anything well, that doesn't have an identity. It's the same issues every year. They can't throw the ball well. They don't have any rhythm in the passing game. They can't run the ball with any consistency. Their O-line is a sieve or a brick wall. It's one or the other. There's never any nuance. It's either they're dominating two or three games out of the year, or they're a turnstile for the other, like, seven or eight. It's insane what's going on with their offense. And you can't say it's because of a lack of skill positions. Xavier Robinson is a good running back. Isaiah Satania is a great receiver. They have good pieces. John Mateer is a great QB. And yet, for some reason, the offense is never right. And that comes down to coaching. And you can't say it's the offensive coordinator because they brought in Ben Arbuckle from Wazoo along with John Mateer. And his offenses were good at Wazoo. So, at some point, it might just be that that's a cultural thing with Brent Venables. And I like Brent Venables. And, you know, if he got fired by Oklahoma and Michigan was considering firing Wink Martindale, I'd be like, okay, hire Brent Venables right now. You hand him a check and tell him to put whatever number you want on that check and we'll pay it. You want to make $4 million as a defensive coordinator? Sold. Brent Venables, welcome to the Michigan Wolverines. Because he is that good. He's got like a 4-21 record against true freshman QBs when calling defense. It's insane. His defenses are great, but maybe he's just not up to it as a head coach. And, you know, there are guys like that. You know, I said for years and years and years that Rich Rodriguez should have been an offensive coordinator because he's not a great head coach, but he's a brilliant offensive mind, and he'd probably be a brilliant offensive coordinator. There are guys like that who you see, like, they get transformed into the head coach, and you're just like, yeah, that's not working out. Will Muschamp is a great example. Or, oh man, what's another one? Billy Napier is one. I'm pretty sure he was an offensive coordinator by trade before becoming a head coach. Or, he was the offensive coordinator under Urban Meyer at Florida. And Dan Mullen, another one, just wasn't a great head coach. Same with Will Muschamp. Certain guys are meant to be a position coach or a coordinator and just not a head coach. And I think maybe Brett Venables is one of them. And if Oklahoma limps to a 9-3 or an 8-4 record and misses the playoffs, I think they'll let him go. It's not, it wouldn't, I don't think it'd be super fair, because, I mean, in the age of enhanced playoffs and parity, 9-4 is, like, 9-3 is the new 10-2. You just gotta, people have gotta get used to having more losses, you know? So, but I think if they limp down the stretch and don't make the playoffs, I think he's gone. And somebody is gonna get one heck of a defensive coordinator. Dear God, I hope it's Michigan. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. All right, moving on to Ole Miss. So, Ole Miss, I had never watched that quarterback of theirs, Trinidad Chambliss. I had never watched him on television. I'd heard stories about him. You know, he was their backup QB. I don't know the name of their starter. It's like Will something or Sam something. I don't remember. Either way, their starter got hurt like in the first or second game or in the fall camp early. And they had to turn it over to Trinidad Chambliss. So this kid is from the Division II level, and I think he was at like Grand Valley State. Some like tiny D2 school that, you know, most people haven't heard of. And he was in the portal, and one of their coaches said, "Holy crap, look at this guy's tape." And he got his boss. And then his boss got his boss. And then that guy eventually got the attention of Lane Kiffin, and they brought him in. And now he's starting in. That kid is so talented. He is one heck of a runner. For a guy who was playing D2 ball last year, he's got an excellent grasp of the offense. He's a gamer. He's one of these guys who is just good at football. And man, he is something. And they got some good pieces on that offense. They really do. I love their wide receivers. I don't know their names, but I was impressed by them when I was watching the game. And that defense is nasty. That is a confident, fast-moving defense that Ole Miss has got. And all of that comes down to Lane Kiffin's a good coach, and he's put together a good team. And people need to understand that last year was supposed to be the year where Ole Miss put it all together. They had Jackson Dart. They had the really senior-laden team. The stars were aligning, and they just fell short. I would argue this year's team is better. And I know that that's crazy because Jackson Dart's playing for the Giants now. He's a first-round draft pick. But Chambliss is, he's real good. And that defense is real good, too. And it's one of those where you wonder how far Ole Miss can go if they get hot at the right moment. You know, if they get hot and they start really pulverizing teams going into a conference championship game, how far can the Lane train go? Because so far we've seen the Lane train kind of come up short year after year after year. But, man, what can this team do? Because I was so thrilled. Because I hold Oklahoma in high regard. I have all off season during the season. I think they're a good team. Now, they've stumbled because Mateer is hurt, and I think that's the source of a lot of their issues. But what Ole Miss was able to do, Oklahoma was out of it. They were never in it. They made it a contest late, but Ole Miss was in control the whole way. And it was up to, and that's because of their coaching. Now, I'm pivoting to my next segment, which also has to do with Lane Kiffin. So, as we all know, Billy Napier got fired by Florida. And something that probably should have happened 2 years ago or last year. Hell, you could have made the argument it should have happened after his first year. It was one of those where he was awful, he's awful, he's awful, and then he'd upset a top 10 team in UK. Oh, we can't fire him because he's almost turning the corner. And he did this for like 4 years, 3 years. So they fired him. And as it has become abundantly clear, the number one target for Florida's fans, their administration, everything, is Lane Kiffin. I mean, it isn't just like a tiny little murmur, it's a roar. We want Lane Kiffin. That's what the Gator fans are saying. They want the Lane train to be in Gainesville from now on. And I totally get it. In contrast to Billy Napier, he's everything Billy Napier is not. Many have said that he's the second coming of Steve Spurrier. You know, kind of big personality, explosive offense kind of guy. And from a Florida perspective, it makes total sense. You get a competent coach who has a track record of winning, even though he's never won a conference championship and he's never gone to the playoffs. But I digress. Either way, Lane Kiffin's a good coach. He's arguably the number one overall prospect if you were to break it down into those terms for this year's coaching carousel. So, from the Florida perspective, it makes total sense to go to bring in Lane Kiffin. Now, from Lane Kiffin's perspective, in my opinion, going to Florida makes no damn sense. Why? You've built a winner in Oxford, Mississippi. You've got the Rebels humming. They got a good QB. They're recruiting well. They're playing well. It's a quality team. Why in the hell would you uproot all of that and take a risk going to Florida? And now I know what people are going to say. But dude, Florida's got all these more resources and money and donors. Who cares, man? You don't think Ole Miss can give them exactly what Florida can? Come on, man. The Lane train has been better than... Ole Miss has been better under Lane Kiffin than Florida's been for literal years. At portal, recruiting. He's got everything he needs in Oxford. Now, if it's not about resources, and it's literally about that helmet, about saying you're the head coach at Florida, you know, saying you're the second coming of Steve Spurrier, if it's an ego thing, then yeah, Lane Kiffin's going to go to Florida. But if it's not about that, and it's literally about how much they can pay him and how much they can do for revenue sharing and NIL and resources and facilities and coaching, if it's all of that, then there's no reason to go to Florida. There's none. And here's the other thing. Florida's administration is a disaster. They have an interim athletic director. No, not athletic director. They have an interim university president because they tried to hire Santa Ono from Michigan. Damn you, Florida. Santa Ono was a great university president. But the Board of Regents said, no way, we're not hiring Santa Ono. So now they just have an interim president. And they have a booster class who keeps putting their grimy little fingers and everything in the football business. It doesn't let the coach be a coach. And their fans are absolutely freaking nuts. They're like, we're Florida. Even though we haven't done anything relevant since Urban Meyer, we have to be a national title contender tomorrow. Even though you just got here 5 minutes ago. If you're not a title contender tomorrow, you're going to be fired. It's crazy. It's like a doghouse filled with 27 cats. It makes no sense. Here's a crazy one. So, 7 of the last 9 Florida head coaches did not get to coach their final game at Florida. They were fired. 7 of the last 9 head coaches at Florida were fired in the middle of the season. I'm sorry. In what universe would I want to hook my train to that? That's crazy. That isn't coincidence. That is pattern of behavior. That is a university culture thing at the football program. I mean, Will Muschamp fired in the middle of the season. Jim McElwain. Billy Napier. I mean, the last one who wasn't... Dan Mullen was another one. The last one who wasn't was Urban Meyer. And before him, I'm pretty sure it was Steve Spurrier. But other than that, it's been like a never-ending cavalcade of fired in the middle of the season. So if you're Lane Kiffin, there's so much risk going to Florida when you've already got a built winner in Oxford, Mississippi. At the end of the day, do I think he's going? Abso-frickin-lutely. They're going to offer him $12 million a year, which means Kurt Cignetti is going to get a raise because his contract, you know, whatever. But Lane's going to get like $12 million a year, and he's going to go to Florida, and Florida's going to be Florida, and in 3 years when it's an unmitigated disaster, they're going to fire his ass in the middle of the season and be right back here in October of 2029 or 2030. It's going to be new boss, same as the old boss. Or Lane Kiffin can be the smart man he is and stay in Ole Miss and just let Florida be a steaming dumpster fire in the SEC for someone else to deal with. Because I ain't want any part of that if I'm him. Mm-mm-mm, no, sir. You can keep that craziness over in Gainesville. Moving on from the Lane train, UCLA. The Cinderella run had to end eventually. No, I mean, everyone was wondering, man, what if they beat Indiana? Could they go to the playoffs? Which the answer was yes if they had beaten Indiana. But they didn't. They lost 56-6. Yeah, it was 21 to nothing before I could even blink. Like I turned on this game on Saturday, and I'm like just doing whatever, and I'm like, holy shit, it's already 21 to nothing. I turned it off. I looked away for like 5 minutes, and it was like 1,000 points. So I was like, we're done. Now, ultimately, what this game came down to is, one, Indiana is a more talented team. Two, Indiana's got an incredible coach, Kurt Cignetti. But three, UCLA just never established the run game. The thing that has been the bread and butter of this resurgent UCLA offense has been running the ball with Nico Iamaleava and their running backs. It's been huge for them, is establishing the run and controlling the pace of the game. Well, their defense has been a liability this whole time, and they couldn't establish the run, which meant it was very hard for Nico to pass. And it just, things spiraled because Indiana's a better team. Simple as that. And I'm just going to say it. Indiana should be number one in the country in the AP poll. I have no idea why Ohio State is still number one in the country. I mean, I've watched both teams. Ohio State is good, and they have one of the best defenses I think I've ever seen. But we have to acknowledge the fact that they have not played a single quality opponent. Texas is not good. The rest of their schedule is one tackling dummy after another. And they've played some weird games in there. They have yet to just pulverize a really good opponent, in my opinion. So, Indiana should be number one in the country. They should. They just have to be. But they're not. It's one of those things. It kind of bothers me that Indiana is having, like, their best season ever. You know, Indiana is the losingest team in college football. They are the Michigan Wolverines of losing. Like, I was making this joke with my dad the other day that, background information, at Michigan home games, every game they play this little highlight reel, hype reel thing with James Earl Jones, who was a Michigan alum, where at part of it he says, you know, we respect integrity and honor excellence. You know, we are the best university in the world. No one has won more than us. We are Michigan, that kind of stuff. So I made the joke that if you made one of those for Indiana before Kurt Cignetti, it would have been like, we respect mediocrity and honor colossal disasters. Nobody has lost more than us. We are Indiana. Like, they've been historically bad. And right now, they're the best team in the country. And because they're Indiana, they're two. They should be number one. It's like when the Detroit Lions had just burst on the scene in 2023, and no one seriously believed the Lions could get to the NFC Championship game. It was like, you're getting down the stretch, and people are still saying, yeah, but it's the Lions. I don't trust the Lions. It's Detroit. They're gonna crap the bed eventually. And yeah, Detroit didn't go to the Super Bowl, but it took a lot of games and a lot of winning before people said, oh yeah, Detroit's a team that wins. And we're in year two of the Kurt Cignetti experience in Indiana, and at this point, we have to acknowledge the fact that Indiana is a contender. They went to the playoffs last year, and yeah, they lost. But he took Indiana to the playoffs. That would be like a coach coming in and taking the Cleveland Browns after going 0-17 and going right into the playoffs and winning. That's what we're talking about. That's the kind of turn. That would be like taking a team that hadn't had a winning season in 30 years, had been like 4-13 or whatever for like 30 straight years, and coming in and in year one taking them to the playoffs. And then in year two being undefeated 2/3 of the way through the season. That is what Kurt Cignetti has done with Indiana. And they should be number one. They're better than Ohio State. I said it. I'll stake that claim. They have a better quarterback than Ohio State. They have a better head coach than Ohio State. They are a better team. And yeah, they're quote-unquote less talented, but they're a better coached team. Look at the way they play. They brutalize everybody. They don't care who you are, where you're playing, whether it's raining, snowing, or raining blood from hell, from hellfire. They don't care. They come in, they pulverize you, put up 50 points, and leave. They walk into your house, tell you to make them a sandwich, eat your food, drink your milk, take your shoes, and leave. That's what they do. Every single week, that's what Indiana does. And it's about time for people to start respecting Indiana as the winning contender that they are. Hell, they're my choice for the Big Ten Conference right now. Because I think the second they run, Ohio State runs into them, they're going to lose. Because I just don't trust their offense. Unlike with Fernando Mendoza, who I think should be the number one for the Heisman right now. So, all right, I'm getting off my Indiana soapbox. I'm real juiced about the Hoosiers. I want to see the Hoosiers kind of... If Michigan can't go all the way this year, I want to see Indiana do it. Just because to see the Indiana Hoosiers win a national championship would prove that the worst thing to ever happen to the SEC was NIL and the transfer portal. Because the second that NIL and the transfer portal came all around, all of a sudden, other teams had a shot. You could build a winning roster suddenly, even if you weren't a traditional Southern contender. So yeah, let me just take another drink real quick, and then we're going to move on to the battle for the Paul Bunyan Trophy. There we go. I was losing my voice there for a bit. All right, Michigan went to East Lansing on Saturday night and took on the Michigan State Spartans in the traditional battle for the Paul Bunyan Trophy. And it was a, if there was ever a game that was a mid-off, it was that. It was a, no, I don't want to win, you win. No, 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 dude, I insist, you win. No, man, you're being rude. I'm going to lose. You win. It was just neither team wanted to win for 3.5 hours. Until eventually Michigan said, fine, I guess we will win. And they stumbled into a lead and sat there. But even still, both teams played so bad. And once again, the officiating by Ron Snodgrass was awful. Like, you look at the offside call against Michigan State where he got a good pass rush and hit Underwood and caused a fumble that Michigan State recovered. On the field, it was called back because of an offside, but if you look at the call, he doesn't line up offsides, and he times the snap perfectly. I was stunned. I watched it again. I was like, holy crap, he timed it perfectly. That's a bad call. And there were a couple of pass interferences that didn't go Michigan's way, that didn't go Michigan State's way. And on the other hand, there were some plays where you're like, how is that specifically not pass interference against the Spartans? Both sides, it's like, how could you not call that? Or how could you call that? Or what were you seeing, ref? It was a horribly ref game. Both ways. Everyone got boned. Now, it had an inordinate impact on the Spartans because they had like 12 penalties. And they were undisciplined all game, but the officiating was awful. Now, focusing in on the actual game itself, neither quarterback was good. Yeah, Bryce Underwood had he had less than 100 yards passing. Now, it didn't matter because Michigan won the game 31-20 with like 270 rushing yards as a team. But. Underwood did not play well. Michigan ran 49 running plays and 17 pass plays. Now, if you're Bo Schembechler and it's 1977, then yeah, that probably sounds like an adequate run-pass balance. But in a modern offense, 27 passes is kind of where you need to be minimum. And they just weren't. Michigan ran the ball and ran the ball and ran the ball. And yeah, it worked, but at some point you have to trust Bryce Underwood to be able to handle it. Like, Michigan State was one of the worst defenses in the country in defending passes over the middle. So what did Michigan do? Nothing over the middle. Michigan was having really good effect with calling play action passes in the first half. So when they do, they just stopped. And, oh, you had a clutch down that you need a first down. Well, who are you going to throw it to? Samaj Morgan, who drops it again. His eighth drop of the season. I'll get to Samaj Morgan later. I'm not even going to get wound up on that yet. But I was just, it's one of those where it has become clear that when you're on the road, expect Michigan to run the ball 65% of the time and throw the ball the rest. If you're at home, then expect it to be half and half. It has become very clear that under Sherrone Moore, that's what we do. On the road, we throw the ball 17 times a game. We run the ball 50 times. That's what we do. Even though that's just insane. It's ludicrous. Because here's the dirty little secret about that game. If Michigan State's offense was competent, they would have won the game. Easy. Because the fact that their offense was incompetent kept giving Michigan opportunities to pull away. You know, bad interception here, fumble there, two stops on fourth down. If they had a real offense, they probably beat Michigan pretty handily because Michigan played a horrible game. And it wasn't because the defense wasn't playing well. It's because Michigan's offense was just putrid. Awful. So, now to get to some of the highlights, I will say, Justice Haynes, welcome back, had like 152 yards rushing. And then you had Jordan Marshall had like 110 yards. They both had great games. Justice Haynes had two rushing touchdowns. Bryce Underwood got in on the rushing touchdown party. He had one from like 19 yards. It was a good game on the ground. The Michigan O-line really started kind of commanding the line of scrimmage, which we haven't really seen a lot of this year, which was great. So in that regard, that was like, woo, cool. But it was very clear that Haynes wasn't healthy. You could tell that it took him a while to kind of get back in the groove, and he wasn't as sharp as maybe you would remember him being. And he's clearly not healthy. Now, if it was me, I might hold him out of the Purdue game and just say, okay, it's going to be the Jordan Marshall and Jasper Parker show against Purdue going into the bye week so that you can have Justice Haynes truly healthy for the final run of Northwestern, Maryland, Ohio State going into the postseason if Michigan ends up actually making it to the postseason. So that's what I would do, but I have a feeling they're probably going to keep playing him because he's just so damn explosive. Like, he had another explosive run against Michigan State that just, like, 70 yards. You're just like, God damn, he is so talented. So, those were the highlights. Now, lowlights. Marlon Klein played one of the worst games I've seen him play in just a long time. Like, all of last week against after the Washington game, it was like, man, it was great to finally see the tight ends involved in the game. And then that they just weren't involved against Michigan State. And you want to ask, well, where'd all that go? Oh, yeah, it was riding the bench because Zach Marshall is the best pass-catching tight end we have. He was the one who was able to make those explosive plays and make the circus catches. And there were a lot of times where Marlon Klein was, like, getting lost in his routes or running the wrong routes or doing a really bad job of getting out of his breaks. And he kind of had some sloppy plays in the run game. And it's just, I know Marlon Klein was just getting healthy and he's getting back in the lineup, but if he's not up to snuff, then you have to play someone else. How many times are we going to see Michigan play guys who just aren't up to it? And that leads us right into Samaj Morgan. At this point, does Samaj Morgan have blackmail material on Sherrone Moore? Does he have, like, dirty pictures of Chip Lindsey or something? Why is he still on the field? Because here's the deal. Samaj Morgan has dropped 8 passes this year. 8. Two of them on fourth downs where you've got to have it. Channing Goodwin was worse, which is crazy. But Samaj Morgan is such a liability in the passing game that it is actually a detriment that he's even on the field. Like, I'm sorry, if he doesn't catch the ball, then stop putting him out there. He's so bad. And he's the worst punt returner I've ever seen. I'm sorry, when you've got 20 yards of open space in front of you, there is no reason to catch the ball and run 20 yards to your left for a 2-yard punt return. And that's assuming he actually returns that damn thing. Usually, he fair catches it inside the 10-yard line and just goes, oh well, shrug emoji, because he's not a good punt returner. Andrew Marsh is so fast, you can't tell me he can't handle it. And if Andrew Marsh can't, if he can't do the punt returns now, then you need to start training him to do them, because Samaj Morgan is a damn liability. Anytime he's on the field, he should be taken off the field. If I had my way, he would never see the field again at Michigan. One drop, okay, that's unfortunate. Three drops, okay, over the season, that's fine. Eight drops, barely 2/3 of the way through the season. I'm sorry, you're a liability. Sit on the bench. Ride the pine. We'll go get Jamar Browder, the true freshman. Surely he can play better. And if not, okay, then we'll play Zach Marshall or Tonelli, that other tight end, or we'll put in a freaking running back. Anyone else? I'm so frustrated watching him run lazy routes, be lazy in run blocking, and drop balls that are such gimmies. Now, admittedly, I could never play wide receiver. I'm not that guy. But as Michigan wide receivers go, he's awful. There are guys on some of those mediocre Rich Rod and Brady Hoke teams that are like, oh my God, you'd be so much better than him. It's like Drew Dilio, short, not super athletic, great hands. You could be a great slot guy in comparison to Samaj Morgan. Or Jeremy Gallen was a great receiver slot guy. It can be done. You can have a slot guy who's barely 5'10", who plays like he's 6'3". Jeremy Gallen was that guy. Samaj Morgan is athletic, but he doesn't catch well. He doesn't return punts. He doesn't run block well. He needs to go away. Go away. And that's the last I'm going to rant about Samaj Morgan this week. Now, admittedly, next week I'll be ranting about Samaj Morgan again when he drops his 9th and 10th ball and fair catches another punt inside his own 10-yard line. But I digress. Michigan State, on the other hand. Nick Marsh should transfer. That wide receiver, that kid is so talented. And my God, Aiden Childs is such a bad quarterback. I mean, I knew he was bad, but I didn't know he was that bad. He couldn't handle the offense. There was no like, oh, he's a quarterback who is managing things. No, he couldn't manage the offense, and for all of his quote-unquote raw talents, the only thing he was good at was quarterback sneak. Like, the one real scramble he did, he fumbled. Oh, and he also threw a really bad interception. He's just, and you could tell he was force-feeding Nick Marsh. And Nick Marsh, because he's forcing these throws, they're either getting deflected or they're flying out of bounds because they're over his head, because he's not accurate. Nick Marsh is an NFL-quality wide receiver. He's a guy who I'd draft him in the 3rd or 4th round. Easy peasy. He's talented. If you put him on Ole Miss, he would be a 1,200-yard receiver probably. He's big. He's fast. He can make circus catches. He's a good route runner. He's one of these guys who should be a bigger deal than he is. He should be one of these guys like Carnell Tate who you have to dedicate resources towards. But instead, he's wasting away on a mediocre Michigan State team. And that's coaching. That's coaching. That's just a coach that's failing to assemble a good roster. So, man, if it didn't occur to me until Sunday morning when I saw this on Reddit that There are a lot of similarities between Rich Rodriguez's tenure at Michigan and Jonathan Smith's tenure at Michigan State. Guy who spent several years at his alma mater who won there. He comes to the team. He doesn't really fit the culture that the team kind of brings in. He fails to instill his own culture. The boosters don't like him. The fans don't like him. The team loses to rivals. Drops games they should win. All of those kind of things. It's one of these things where it's the same problem where you've picked a guy who doesn't instill his own culture and all at the same time does not match the existing culture. Like, what when you think of Michigan State football, what do you think of? For me, I think of a team that's kind of dirty, granted, but they're incredibly physical. They develop incredible talent. They're a team that leaves you bloody and bruised no matter when you play them, no matter if you win or lose. That is Michigan State football. They're not a team that is flashy and soft and doesn't play good defense. What is this Michigan State team other than mediocre? They don't do anything well. They're just there going through the motions, losing week after week. And that comes down to coaching. And at the same time, I hate the Spartans. I'm a Michigan fan. I don't like the Spartans at all. I think they're a bunch of dirty thugs. They have been my entire life. But it's good for the Big Ten when the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry is a close rivalry, when the games matter, when the games are in contention. I mean, Michigan couldn't throw the ball in 24, and they still beat Michigan State, even though Michigan State had more rushing yards than them. And that's important because the team that runs the ball more effectively wins the Michigan-Michigan State game 9 times out of 10. That's how poorly coached the team is under Jonathan Smith. They should have beaten Michigan last year. Hell, they could have beaten Michigan this year. But instead, Sherrone Moore is the first head coach to go 2-0 against Michigan State in his first two games against them since Benny Oosterbaan in 1948 and 1949, I do believe. I know it's Oosterbaan. I think it's 48 and 49. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Jim Harbaugh never went 0-2. He went 0-2. Lloyd Carr had a bad start. Rich Rod, Brady Hoke, they were all middling. I mean, this Bump Elliott, Bo Schembechler, Gary Moeller, all of them, none of them did this. But Sherrone Moore is 2-0 because this Michigan State team is mediocre as hell. And that's coaching. Now, do I think they should fire their coach this year? No. There are so many teams that are more important than them that are firing their head coach that if they fire their head coach now, they're going to hire some G5 guy maybe you get Jason Eck from New Mexico. Okay, but is that really a hire that is going to revive things in Michigan State? I don't think so. So, troubled times. Part of me, a tiny, tiny part, deep, deep down, feels bad for Michigan State fans because they're, when you reach the stage of apathy where you don't even care that you lost, that we're the stage where you're actively hoping that Michigan will beat you by 50 points so the athletic department will fire your head coach. Yeah, it's getting bad in East Lansing. All right, moving on to quick hits. Like I said, this is a new segment every week for these college football roundups. We're going to do some quick hits where we just kind of quickly talk about a couple of games. So Iowa has an offense. Not so fast. So they defeated Minnesota 41-3. They led 31-0 with 10 minutes to go in the second quarter. And they led 31-0 at halftime. But only 3 of Iowa's drives in the entire game went longer than 25 yards. And those were their first 3 drives where they really built their lead. So in that regard, yeah, Iowa's offense is significantly better. Make no mistake, their offense is an actual offense this year. But Minnesota threw 3 picks, including a pick 6 and another that was a very long return to set up a short Iowa drive for a touchdown. That Minnesota gave up a 29-yard touchdown throw and surrendered a 50-yard punt return touchdown. This is all to say, total team win for Iowa over Minnesota. Very impressive stuff. This is the best Iowa team since 2021. And before then, probably 2015. maybe not all the way back to like the Ricky Stanzi days, but like this, their QB Mark Gronowski is really good. All right, Vanderbilt defeats Mizzou. The Vanderbilt Commodores proved once again that they are a team that won't go away. They defeated Mizzou 17-10 in an absolute rock fight. This game was so ugly and so physical, and it was two teams that want to play ball the same way, which is run the ball with your running back and your quarterback and just control the flow of the game and reduce the amount of drives and just play smash mouth football, whatever you can equate modern version of smash mouth football. At the same time, the coaching staff at Missouri reports that starting quarterback Bo Pribula will be out for a while with a leg injury. We don't really know what specifically happened, but I have a feeling, I'm pretty sure one of his linemen fell on his leg in a scrum at like the 3-yard line. So that's devastating for Mizzou. Like their season's over. Losing to Vandy and losing to Bo Pribula, they're done. Bye-bye. But Vandy is in the top 10 for the first time in like 50 years. And this is at least 50 years, and this is the best season they've had in my lifetime, by far. All right, Alabama comes back against South Carolina. At one point in this game, South Carolina was up 22-14. And then, well, Alabama scored and got a two-pointer to tie it up 22-22. Okay, whatever. There's still enough time to drive down the field and kick a field goal. And then South Carolina fumbled the ball on like the 7-yard line. Okay, don't panic. We can still play defense and go to overtime. And then Bama drove all the way down the field and scored a touchdown and won 29-22. Even though South Carolina outplayed Bama the entire game. They were the better team. But Bama is a better coached team, and a well-coached team can beat an opponent that is outplaying them. We've seen this with Georgia. Those Kirby Smart teams, they play like an absolute horror show, and then in the fourth quarter, like, oh, are we supposed to win today? Right, and then they turn on and they win because they have good coaching. That's what teams with good coaching do. They can find a way to win even when they're getting outplayed and out-executed. And man, South Carolina, I like Shane Beamer, but it's ugly in South Carolina right now. All right, Texas defeats Mississippi State in overtime. This is a bad Mississippi State team. Talk about a total collapse. So, Arch Manning had to engineer a 17-point comeback late in the game to engineer a chance for Texas to win the game in overtime. You look at the box score of this game, you're like, how is it that Mississippi State choked this away? They lost in overtime 45-38 to Texas. And Arch Manning, and this is going to come up especially later, Arch Manning left in overtime with a concussion. And backup quarterback Matthew Caldwell had to throw the game-winning touchdown in overtime. But gritty win for Texas, horrible collapse for Mississippi State. All right, next week we got Ohio State versus Penn State. This was supposed to be the massive matchup that was going to be a test for Ohio State. Instead, Ohio State's schedule remains weak, and I'm anticipating an absolute bloodbath. My prediction is 31-6 Ohio State. I think it's not even going to be close. Penn State's fired their head coach. They've lost Drew Aller for the season. I think it's just going to be show up, get punched in the mouth, and call it quits kind of game. All right, Vanderbilt is taking on Texas. So Vanderbilt's riding high. Diego Pavia is a great QB, and Clark Lee is a great coach, and they're rocking and rolling. Meanwhile, rumors of Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian reaching out to NFL teams about jobs, and the game is the team is really not playing well, and they don't really do anything real well. And now you've lost Arch Manning for the game, more than likely. I mean, he's concussion, so probably at least a week. So how will Texas perform with their backup QB against a very hot Vanderbilt team? I am predicting that Vanderbilt's going to win 24-20. Now, it's going to be close because Sark's a good coach, but I think Vanderbilt's going to pull it out. All right, Oklahoma's taking on Tennessee. Can Oklahoma right the ship and get back on track? Part of me doubts it because I don't think John Mateer is healthy enough, and Josh Heupel is, he's really got that Tennessee team clicking again. Joey Aguilar is playing real well. They got a kind of a sneaky defense. Josh Heupel, I guess he's the first head coach in Tennessee to win like 11 games in a row, like multiple years in a row or something like that. It's the kind of thing where you're like, he's like the best Tennessee coach this century and parts of last century. Like he's the best Tennessee coach in a long time, and that team is real good, and they got a good QB in Joey Aguilar, and like I said, a sneaky defense, and I am predicting that Tennessee is going to win 30-27. I think it's going to be close, but Tennessee is going to win. And finally, Michigan is taking on Purdue. So Purdue is kind of a sneaky team. They've got a great new head coach in Barry Odom. Barry Odom brought Fresno State to Michigan in 24 and scared the absolute hell out of Michigan. Now, admittedly, we didn't know at the time that Michigan was not good. But at the same time, that Fresno State team, they were in the hunt. They had quarterback Mikey Keene, and that team who was a physical defense, and they were in that thing for the duration. Scared the hell out of us Michigan fans. I was in a hotel room in Wisconsin at the time, and it was like, oh my God, are we going to lose this game? What is going on? Why won't Fresno go away? It's because Barry Odom was a good coach. And now he's at Purdue, and while they're like 2-6, they're sneaky. They got a good offense. They have a surprisingly good offense. They scored like 30 points on Notre Dame. They scored like 20 points on USC or something like that. It's one of those where they're the kind of team that if you get caught napping, they can beat you. Now, admittedly, they've lost like 6 straight games, but still. I expect Michigan is going to once again look like a totally different team because they're at home. It's one of those where it is clear that this team, which admittedly is the youngest team in the Big Ten Conference, they got 3 redshirt freshman starters on the O-line, true freshman QB, true freshman starting wide receiver, they got freshmen all over the defense, and sophomores, they're very young. So I'm expecting that because they're going to be at home, they're going to be right back to what they were doing against Washington, where they're throwing the ball everywhere and running the ball, and you know, it's going to be the light show and it's going to be amazing. And we're going to wonder, man, why didn't they do this against Michigan State? It's because they're at home. My prediction is Michigan is going to win 38-24. Michigan is a 20.5-point favorite, and the over-under is 49.5 points. I am predicting that for once this season, Michigan is going to beat the spread. Because they're at home, I think they're going to absolutely just blast Purdue out of nowhere, and you're going to be like, what's going on? Why couldn't we do this last week? Of course, then they're going to go on the road to Wrigley Field to play Northwestern the week after that, and we'll see how that goes. But either way, 38-24, Michigan over Purdue. That's my prediction. All right. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere else that podcasts are available, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please consider subscribing if you can, or like if you can, or leave a comment if you can. Either way, spread the word. Tell your friends and family about the podcast so we can reach more people. For those of you watching on YouTube, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. Like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon to get notifications. And please consider leaving a comment telling me what you think of the episode to help me feed that algorithm. Either way, my name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.